Welcome, welcome, welcome in to the Chief Zone Podcast. I am Farzin Vasugian. Appreciate all of you guys taking the time to download and listen to this episode of the podcast, as it is the final podcast of the Chief Zone before training camp. Quarterbacks and rookies and a couple of other players already at training camp, and the rest of the team will be there on, I believe, Friday the 26th. So it is a very exciting time for football fans all around and for the Chiefs this weekend. And we've got a lot to cover, of course. Everyone knows about the Tyreek Hill news. He will not be suspended, to a lot of people's surprise. A few people not surprised. We'll discuss that. Also going to do our training camp battles. We found 10 position battles that we think are key, the top 10 battles in St. Joe. We'll talk about that. We're also going to do our game-by-game early predictions. We'll discuss that. And we'll also wrap up the show. We'll go around the NFL out of bounds, and we'll throw our penalty flags, and we'll do our hot take segment. We'll also read your text messages. We've got a ton of text to get into, and understandably so, because this is a pretty busy week for the Kansas City Chiefs. A lot of news going on, not just with Tyreek Hill, but a lot more as well. So we're going to get right into it with Travis Kelce's ankle. How is he doing there? Chris Jones and his contract situation. Is he going to be at camp? We'll discuss all of that and much more. I am in Olathe, Kansas, as usual, and Zach Seginga is with me. And usually he is in the good old city of Overland Park, Kansas, but that is no longer the case. Zach's not even in the state of Kansas or in the Kansas City area whatsoever. Zach is all the way in the East Coast now joining us. Zach, welcome in. How are you? How is the East Coast?
It's good, Farz. I mean, to be honest, it was so freaking hot the other day. It reminded me a lot of home. But yeah, I took a job in New York City and, you know, have enjoyed living in the Big Apple. It's been, you know, a pretty busy couple of days, or, well, weeks. But yeah, kind of a fun change.
You are not, we don't have to worry about you being converted into a Giants fan or a Jets fan or anything.
I mean, God, no. But also, I don't understand for some of the people who are fans of those organizations. Like, it's not exactly like, you know, it'd be like, you know, moving to Kansas City in 2012 and being like, yeah, I'm going to convert to being a Chiefs fan while Scott Pioli's still the GM. Like, it's the same kind of deal.
Oh, by the way, speaking of Scott Pioli, did you hear what Bernard Pollard said on Twitter?
I did, and I look forward to hearing the entirety of that audio, because I hope he just puts him on blast.
I just saw this the other day. He tweeted over the weekend at some point, but for those who didn't see, Pollard posted on Twitter that Pioli went up to him and told him, hey, we're cutting you because of what you did to Brady in that 2008 game when Brady went down with a torn ACL. I'm like, wow. I mean, just cutting him right off the bat, because obviously Pioli came from New England. So he's close to Brady.
Why would you stay that loyal to your old organization? Like, I mean, that's ridiculous to me. Like, you want, you know, you're Scott Pioli. You've left New England now, so New England is no longer your concern. You should be focused 110% on making the Chiefs better. And correct me if I'm wrong, Bernard Pollard definitely made that Chiefs team better.
Yeah, I think, you know, he could have been a better safety. I believe he was a seventh-round pick. I get him and Jared Page mixed up. I think he was a second-round pick, and Jared Page, excuse me, was the seventh-rounder, but both of them played a lot. He was also a really good special teams player. Oh, yeah, I thought, you know, I know they were together during some of the down years in Kansas City, but I thought those two did a pretty good job in Kansas City for the most part. I mean, Pollard's hard-hitting ability, great coverage, definitely needed some improvement, but, man, it is kind of frustrating to hear that Pioli would do that. But hey, Pioli, I mean, there were a lot of things that came out about Pioli as he left Kansas City. One other thing I wanted to ask you, did you get a chance to listen to any of the training camp audio, some of the press conferences that they had Tuesday afternoon?
With the move, I have not had a chance to catch up on some of those things, so I'm gonna, you know, take the L on that one. But
oh, no, it's fine. What's really funny is, and a lot of times I don't listen to these a whole lot, but I'm listening in my car, and somebody in kind of a funny voice is asking Patrick Mahomes, hey, Patrick, you know, you're coming off a great season with the MVP award and everything else. How do you try to repeat that kind of a season moving forward? And Mahomes responds and says, it's hard to pay attention to your face when you've got that gold chain around you. And I'm just listening in my car. I'm like, who is he talking to? And I looked it up on my phone once I got home. It was actually Mecole Hardman who crashed the press conference and asked that question. So it's kind of cool. Now, I mean, you're seeing the rookie kind of get involved in. In fact, I believe the first question was about Patrick Mahomes and Mecole Hardman kind of trying to get on the same page, especially with this offense. A lot to look forward to. So we'll talk a little bit about that later, but for right now, the biggest story in the NFL, obviously going to be the biggest story. We'll start off here with Tyreek Hill. No longer suspended, at least from the Chiefs standpoint, the team imposed suspension, no longer suspended, but the NFL will not suspend Tyreek Hill. Lots of outrage all across the NFL. There was a firestorm on Twitter because of this. Many people calling this controversial. Lots of fans angry. And you know what, Zach? I don't blame them for being angry because the national media hardly made an effort to emphasize these text messages, which, in my opinion, and I think a lot of people would agree with this, it was the biggest part of the entire story. It was the most important part. It was the turning part of this story. It was not just the brief conversation that was put out that was verified where Tyreek was saying, hey, I'm going to get in trouble because of what you did. And Chris Sale responded saying, yes, I know, it's my fault, blah, blah, blah. But there were lots and lots of text messages that were verified through a third party and handed to the NFL. But the way the texts, I guess, were read in the attorney's letter to the NFL, apparently people don't text like that ever, Zach. Look, I had a back and forth conversation with Mina Kimes of ESPN. She's a columnist for ESPN. And I wrote a tweet saying, hey, look, she actually presented the facts very well on the ESPN radio show, on Russillo's radio show. And I said, you know, I wish she mentioned the text. And she responded to me saying she doesn't believe in the text. And I said, why? And then I asked her, I said, do you think the attorney just made them up? And she says she never claimed that the attorney made them up. And I'm like, okay, I never said you claimed it. I'm asking if that's what you think. But wait a minute, she's saying she doesn't believe the text. And then she's saying, well, I don't think the attorney made them up. So, I mean, this makes no sense. I mean, that's like saying, I don't even know what to compare those to, really. She's saying she doesn't believe the text, but then says she doesn't think the attorney made them up. Again, it's not just those texts that were made public that were verified. Lots and lots of text messages were reportedly verified. But, you know, hey, that's fine. Mike Freeman has a narrative. Mike Florio has a narrative, and they refuse to give it up. So it's okay. She's not alone on this. Let me just say this, Zach. I'm surprised because of the comment that Tyreek Hill made, the threat. I think that warranted at least a 2-4 game suspension. Here's my response to this, to the NFL's decision. Maybe, just maybe, the NFL said, okay, he was framed in this recording, which for the longest time, we only got the short version of it. She tried to provoke him to get him to say something, and then the text messages we received was evidence of that. That's just my guess as to how the NFL went about this. Oh, by the way, one last point I want to make. Another key part of the story that the media refuses to put out, Crystal Espinal did not respond nor cooperate with the NFL when they reached out to her. And I tweeted to Mina Kimes, and she says that I should go speak to a domestic violence expert on that. Hold up. She was a full participant in all of this. And then when the story stopped going her way, when she finds herself in a bad spot, she stops cooperating. Please tell me why I need a domestic violence expert. Look, folks, I get there was a narrative, but I think we got it. Some people just got to drop it and say, hey, look, we were wrong on this.
Yeah, I think that the only thing that might backed her up on that particular front is that I can understand to a level where, as a victim of domestic violence, you might want to, not be involved with the investigation that's going on by the other party's employer. Where it could feel like, you're being, I guess in some cases they would claim, re-victimization. Generally, that's more in terms of sexual violence, having to relive those incidents. Like, I recognize that that's part of it, and I'm no expert, to be fair. But I think that's the only thing I could possibly come up with for why she wouldn't want to cooperate with the NFL. But at the same time, like, at least just saying your piece, I don't think that's that out of the question. Maybe I'm off base here, but I sure don't think so.
You know, I kept saying for the longest time, you know, the text messages, that's an important part of the story, and I want to hear her side of this. But she's been pretty silent for quite some time. And look, KCTV5's Casey Clark, the news director, who is a donk as far as I'm concerned, he did say that they were not given permission to post the audio. And then when the Johnson County DA, Steve Howe, said that, you know, he thinks a crime has been committed but doesn't know who to charge, that's when KCTV5 was apparently given permission to post the audio, which, you know, the timing of that is kind of interesting. And I don't know exactly who gave the audio. I don't think it was Crystal, probably someone very close to her trying to get. By the way, I'm seeing a lot of people on social media share screenshots. Apparently people are launching their own investigation, all these fans, about conversations they've been having with people close to Crystal. And I guess there's some family issue, which, again, this is all kind of unverified right now. I know Marty McDonald, a friend of the podcast who found Save Our Chiefs, he used to be an NFL reporter, if I remember correctly. He had found some information, something that has to do with extortion of money involving Crystal's family. Again, not verified, but it's not. It's also not discussed by the mainstream media, so to say. There's a lot going on in this story. It's a really ugly storm. And look, Tyreek Hill, yeah, maybe the best wide receiver in the NFL, but man, even pro athletes go through this kind of crap, and it's unfortunate. Let me just say this, because I know we beat this topic to death this offseason. Bottom line, let's all learn from this. Whether you are a fan or a journalist, I jumped to conclusions. Many of you did as well. And if you didn't, hey, good on you. If you were one of those very few people who waited on the facts, hey, great. Zach and I have both admitted to that. I'm very guilty of being a prisoner in the moment. I'm very guilty of wanting to voice my opinion the moment something comes out right away. Whatever I'm thinking is also going to go on the social media pages. I'm guilty of that. But very few are admitting.
Also guilty of adjusting, you know, and learning as information is revealed. Like,
yeah,
you know, that would be a disservice.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. A lot of these people in the media are willing to admit that they were wrong or they jumped the gun on some of this stuff. Some of these highly opinionated national sports writers, which, by the way, it's so hilarious. These are people who are highly opinionated, yet when you ask them a question or when you challenge their stance with your opinion, these highly opinionated people get pretty sensitive. Huh? It's kind of funny how that works with heavily opinionated writers. I mean, they just won't let it go. Why? I don't know. I don't know if they have something to lose here, if they've got something they've got to hold on to, such as a narrative. Do they get fired if they admit they're wrong? I don't know. But when you present them with these facts, they just shut you down because it doesn't fit their narrative.
I think you're right. But I think that in this particular case, I think it's more just an overabundance of caution and not wanting to be even remotely perceived as supporting, you know, domestic abuse in any way, shape, or form. Not saying that Tyreek did it or anything, but I certainly understand where the mass media on a national scale comes from, where, you know, if you're going to be wrong on one side of this or the other, I can understand wanting to, you know, side with the victim out of, you know, just kind of as a default position. And I think that's kind of what they've done here. I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying I understand it.
I think what a lot of people need to keep in mind, the Johnson County DA says, we believe a crime has been committed, but we don't know who to charge. The NFL basically said the same thing, in which we cannot find any evidence that a wrongdoing occurred, at least from Tyreek Hill's standpoint. I mean, they're not going to suspend Crystal Espinal. They're focusing only on Tyreek Hill. Now, surely the NFL can reach out to Tyreek, follow up, and try to help provide some sort of support for him and Crystal moving forward. They can do that. But as far as suspensions, I mean, they weren't able to find anything to suspend Tyreek Hill. And look, again, the text messages, I think, are a big, and her not even responding to the NFL and her just basically disappearing from the face of this earth when the story took a turn, I think those are pretty relevant facts right there that a lot of people are not willing to discuss. Look, I know we beat this topic to death, and to be clear, again, like I said, they didn't find any wrongdoing. Maybe child abuse occurred, maybe it didn't, and we don't know who did it. Innocent until proven guilty, yeah, I get that for sure. You know, when the Johnson County DA had his press conference, Zach, I had more questions than answers. Now that a lot of the facts have come out, I still have questions. Perhaps some that have nothing to do with me on a personal level, and that's, hey, I get it. It's none of my business, nor anyone else's, but I certainly do have way fewer questions this time around with all of this.
I think for the most part, I think the biggest question I've still got is really, it does kind of go back to the 2014 thing, because ultimately, in this particular case, what we've dealt with in the last, you know, couple of months, there's not a lot of clarity one way or another. It's a very gray area, and as such, you can really make a case for either side, just because there's nothing that, you know, is hard cut, you know, very cleanly one way or another. Like, with what we've got, it's very easy to spin it either way. So, that being said, I think that it ultimately does come down to the lens that the 2014 situation does put on things. You know, it comes down to whether or not, you know, he was actually guilty of doing these things and pled as such in an attempt to, you know, just be like, yep, did it, did my, you know, let's get this over with so that way I can still get a shot at the NFL. Or was it, you know, I'm not able to afford the high-priced defense attorney. I'm going to have this, you know, overworked, underpaid public defender on my case, and likely not going to, that's probably not going to have that positive an outcome. So why would I waste my time fighting it? You know, when I could just plead guilty and move on with my life. If it's that latter case, you know, where it was a plea taken just to expedite the process, but not a, you know, true admission of guilt, which does happen pretty regularly in the American justice system. That's just kind of part of the game. If that's the case and he's been framed both times, then I can understand. Yeah, you know, it's like that would really make, depending on how that case shook out, would have a massive impact on how I view this particular case, because it's really, does he earn the benefit of the doubt or not? And I think that's ultimately what this comes down to. I mean, though, when it's all said and done, it's all just a mess, and I'm glad to be able to put it behind us to a level.
I really hope Tyreek Hill does speak on this, and I know how the Chiefs can be, and I'm guessing, given how KCTV5's coverage of this was, I'm guessing the PR department, the head coach, and the rest of the front office and the players have all had a meeting as to how open you should be with the media. And that's just a guess on my end. Look, I really hope Tyreek Hill speaks on this, because I do have a couple of questions, and I think just for the sake of public perception, maybe he should try to clear the air on some of these things, but I have a feeling he's... Did you see Mark Donovan's meeting with the media when the news came out that he will not be suspended?
I did not. I saw their statement that they put out, but I did not see the press conference.
Okay, so I was trying to ask someone if they had the link to hit to him, because I saw this the day of. Patrick Mahomes spoke the day of, and Mark Donovan spoke the day of, but I could not. I was trying to look for the Mark Donovan audio again. I couldn't find it, but they kept asking him, you know, how does it feel to hear about the news with Tyreek Hill? And people were asking this in different ways, in different words, three times. And every single time he responded with, we are, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, we're looking forward to getting training camp underway. Like, not even wanting to talk about Tyreek Hill, which I thought
was...
Can
you blame him?
No, but look, this is a pretty big story. Like, the NFL is taking a lot of heat for this, and I understand. But I think we need some, I think, again, for public sake, I like a little bit of clarity on this. That's why I'm hoping Tyreek Hill will speak up, but I have a feeling he might just say, I'm here for training camp questions, or I'm just here so I don't get fined, or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm not exactly
sure
how that's going to go.
The other thing, though, that I will say from the NFL's perspective, I mean, I think I mentioned this on one of our earlier discussions about this, it wouldn't shock me for a minute to learn that Goodell was a little bit lenient on this particular case, given the fact, just given the general lack of evidence at his disposal. Yeah, you know, with that lack of evidence being what it is, and the fact that we're going to have to go in and negotiate a new CBA, I think that he is doing his best to show some major restraint on, you know, the fact that he is really judge, jury, and executioner across the board here. I think that's certainly something that he's, you know, going to want to show that level of discretion in order to try to retain those powers as they go in to negotiate the CBA.
I know Florio's really hanging on to this story that Jay Glazer reported earlier this offseason that Tyreek Hill could get traded, but a lot of reports have come out that contract negotiations are back underway again, and Tyreek Hill could very well be the highest paid wide receiver in the NFL. I just have one concern moving on with Tyreek Hill, Zach, because whenever, you know, the Chiefs, for example, the first game of the year on the road in Jacksonville, second game on the road in Oakland, when the PA announcer for those teams at those home stadiums, when they say, you know, Patrick Mahomes, 10-yard pass complete to Tyreek Hill, you know, doing it in a generic voice, not upbeat. You know, as soon as he says Tyreek Hill, people are going to boo the hell out of him. And when Tyreek Hill's walking on the sidelines, I mean, fans are going to shout some things. They're going to shout woman beater or child beater. I mean, these kinds of things. I guess, you know, my concern would be if it continues and it just adds on and on and on, Tyreek Hill at one point might lose his cool. And I don't know if that'll impact his play. I hope not. I know I might be overthinking some things, but hey, look, fans, I mean, especially with some places like in Arrowhead, the front row seats are elevated, so it's not, it's like, you know, I can go there and act like a tough guy and say something to a player, and honestly, a player is not going to get close to me for that. There are some people out there who like to play that tough guy card. That's just the only thing I'm really concerned with in this whole Tyreek Hill saga, if you would.
Yeah, but that being said, I do think that he's already exhibited an ability to keep his head down, keep his mouth shut throughout this entire process, even as he's been effectively, you know, pretty much smeared in the media. And I think that certainly, you know, certainly shows a level of, I guess, discretion on his part, the ability to keep his cool on that. I think that that certainly bodes well. But yeah, I'm with you. I hope that, you know, he's able to take some of this, I mean, as in stride as you can. In stride's probably not the right word, because this isn't something, you know, that this isn't a normal thing to have to deal with.
Yeah.
But I agree. I hope it doesn't manifest itself as another larger issue.
Let's move on here, and we'll return to Tyreek Hill and some of the text messages, but we're going to move on and talk about some of the key battles at training camp. Obviously going to be underway this weekend, and a lot of interesting spots here. Some starting spots, but also some spots on the depth chart. Some of the key backup positions on this football team that I think a lot of fans are going to be interested in. So, Zach, here we go. Let's start the music. Let's go number one here. I think this is the most interesting. We'll start with offense. The starting center position with Austin Reeder and Nick Allegretti, who was the 7th-round draft pick. And I'll throw James Murray's name in there. I don't think he's going to emerge. But I think between Reeder and Allegretti, it's going to be very interesting. By the way, you know, let's just make a guess as to who the week one starter is going to be. Maybe this will change as the season goes on. But week one starter, you know, I know Allegretti's getting a lot of hype, but I think Reeder, just based on experience and Allegretti being a 7th-round pick, I think Reeder gets the starting nod for week one.
I think that, yeah, Reeder's absolutely going to get the starting nod. I think that he's really an underrated talent. He performed very well in Mitch Morse's spot last year whenever Mitch Morse got hurt. So I think it's his job to lose, absolutely. And I think that you'll see Allegretti, you know, slide in. He'll still absolutely make the team, don't get me wrong, but I think he'll slide in as, you know, that Andy Reid special, which is to say the swing guard center type, you know, kind of like what Zach Fulton used to be, or to a lesser extent what Cam Irving has been.
And I think this is a good transition to go to the left guard spot between Cameron Irving and Khalil McKenzie. Irving was
and
traded. That as well. Irving was acquired in a trade from Cleveland. Khalil McKenzie, he was drafted last year in the 6th round, converted from a defensive lineman to an offensive lineman. Look, I'm going to go with Irving on this one. Who do you see emerging as a week one starter there?
I think that Irving's the week one starter, but I think that McKenzie, you know, he's been working with Will Shields in the offseason, if you've paid attention to the franchise at all. So that was certainly encouraging, and I would imagine they wouldn't be featuring him if, you know, he wasn't, you know, at least showing some signs of emerging. Plus, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, his dad, I mean, I know his dad is Reggie McKenzie, who was the Raiders GM while, but I think he's also a Hall of Fame offensive lineman, if my memory serves. He might not be Hall of Fame, but he was certainly a stud in his time. So I think that, you know, especially when we drafted him, the idea was to turn him into an offensive lineman, and I think that we might be seeing that plan come to fruition.
Now, the Chiefs have made it clear Damian Williams is the starter, but you know as well as anyone else that on an Andy Reid type of offense, running backs are very important. Now, I know Kareem Hunt, very rare nowadays. He was a down-for-down back. He played a lot of downs for the Kansas City Chiefs. We don't see that much. We'll see what kind of a running back Damian Williams is going in as a week one starter. But the number two running back on this team, Carlos Hyde, Darrell Williams, Darwin Thompson, a sixth-round pick in this year's draft. Man, it's so hard to say. I'm just going to go with Carlos Hyde just based on experience.
I think that's the right call. I think that you might see Thompson start to emerge towards the end of the year in more of like a third down back sort of a role. But I think that for the moment, I mean, it's definitely Hyde's to lose. I think the real question comes down to whether or not you see Hyde. You know, typically when you look at a running back depth chart, you tend to think of your primary running back as like, yep, he's your first, you know, first and second, you know, sometimes third down kind of guy. But then you keep the backup, you know, as like the Darren Sproles style third down scat back. And it'll be interesting to see if Hyde doesn't actually get more of the first and second down type carries and they let Williams, you know, slide into that sort of third down scat back role.
Travis Kelce is cleared to go ahead and start practicing with the Chiefs, which is great news, having surgery on his ankle earlier this offseason. But with Demetrius Harris moving on to Cleveland, and I know he was a liability at times, but still, he had a lot of familiarity with this offense. In fact, he had a lot of skill sets similar to Kelce, especially when it came to speed. And now the Chiefs have to go in a new direction for a backup tight end. Blake Bell, a very notable name, especially if you followed Big 12 football, former Oklahoma Sooner. Very interesting tight end. You've also got Davis Wells and Deion Yelder. This is a pretty thin group of tight ends here. Again, I know Blake Bell's a notable name if you have paid attention to local college football, but it is kind of a toss-up here. I'm kind of wanting to say Blake Bell, but I got to be honest, I don't really know. I like Blake Bell. I think you can do some things with him if you're really creative on this offense, especially when it comes to wildcat plays, trick plays, and whatnot. The Chiefs do love that shovel pass move to a tight end. They did a lot with Kelce, and I think you can do that with Blake Bell. So I'll say Blake Bell on this one.
I'll say we know Andy likes to get creative whenever he's got, you know, someone in place who can do a bunch of different things. And the fact that Blake Bell's a former quarterback, I think, also bodes pretty well. I think that you know, makes him a much better route runner for sure. Kind of the same way that Kelce has benefited in that regard. So I'm going to say Blake Bell, but it wouldn't shock me for a minute for the week one backup tight end to be someone who's not on this roster today.
This is going to be very interesting. Switching over to the defensive side of the football, let's go to the defensive line. A couple of spots there that I think are wide open right now. The defensive tackle interior spot next to Chris Jones. We know it'll be his spot by the time he returns, but Derek Nady, a third-round pick last year. Kalen Saunders, a third-round pick this year. Xavier Williams, who joined the team out of Arizona last year. Got a couple of interesting names. This one, I absolutely have no idea who's going to emerge. I guess the easy answer would be Xavier Williams based on experience, but I think even these young guys could maybe push for a starting role here.
I mean, I think Nady had the starting role pretty well handled last year, though admittedly that was in a 3-4, so it's a little different here. But ultimately what I'm seeing is I look at those four names, I look at, you know, you've got Chris Jones and Kalen Saunders as like the extremely disruptive pass rusher type. I mean, if you look at Saunders' tape, he's wicked quick. But then you've got Nady and Williams, both of whom are a little bit more of like, you know, the gap eater, so to speak. You know, the type that would be the nose tackle in a 3-4 system, whereas the other two would be one of the outside defensive ends or something like that, like Chris Jones was last year. And so I think that realistically, I think you'll see Nady take that spot next to Jones, but you'll see a rotation of all four of these guys, really. Like, they're all going to get a ton of snaps, because that's, I mean, we've proven that's how we like to run our defensive line, and I think that that's what you'll see across the board with Steve Spagnuolo coming in as well.
We're halfway through, and I'm glad you mentioned the Steve Spagnuolo part, because him coming in, that's a very important part for this defense as well, but halfway through, sticking with this defensive line, we know the right end spot belongs to Frank Clark, who the Chiefs traded for right before the draft. But what about the other side, the left end spot? You got Alex Ogafor, you got Emmanuel Ogba. They were acquired this offseason. And then you got guys like Breland Speaks and Tano Passanio, who, again, aren't rookies, but they've been drafted in the second round very recently for Kansas City. I hate to give this answer again two times in a row, mind you, but I don't know who's going to emerge. I'm really not sure. I think these are all good guys. I think they all end up staying on the spot, and they can all provide great depth, but it's hard for me to really pick a guy. I'm kind of hoping it's Breland Speaks, just because he was a draft pick on this football team.
Yeah, I think it'll be Okafor. I think that, you know, when you look at that group of guys, there's Okafor and then there's everybody else. And don't get me wrong, it's not like it's a massive jump, but it's certainly substantial. I think that, you know, with Ogba and Passanio, you've got two guys who look pretty similar. And, you know, if you look at just strictly the way that they're built, those guys have had some success in Steve Spagnuolo's defense in the past. So that'll be interesting to watch, but I think ultimately the, you know, starting left-end job is Alex Okafor's to lose.
You know, I originally did not think that this middle linebacker spot was something worth discussing, but you did when we were talking about prepping for this podcast and talking about training camp battles. I know your very first hot take on this podcast was that Reggie Ragland won't be on this team. So I've got to ask you, who do you think will be the week one starter at middle linebacker?
I mean, I guess the question really comes down to, I know that you know, Anthony Hitchens struggled quite a bit moving inside last year. I don't know if he'd be able to play the Mike position in the 4-3. So, I mean, if he's able, I think that, you know, it's him or Darren Lee ultimately that it'll come down to, because I think Darren Lee has shown that he can do a pretty nice job there. But really, I think, like, with this linebacking core, there's a whole lot that still needs to be sorted out. I mean, I don't think Reggie Ragland has shown quite enough, you know, in terms of his ability to do more than stop the run, which in a 3-4, you know, there's certainly room for two inside linebackers, one who's better at stopping the run, one who's better at stopping the pass. But with the 4-3 being what it is, there's less room for, you know, that, because you've essentially, you put the run stopper in on the defensive line instead. And so I don't know if there's room for him in this linebacking room. He may very well prove me wrong, and frankly, I hope he does, because I think he's, you know, shown flashes of being an incredible linebacker, and boy does he hit hard. I love watching that.
I'm glad you mentioned Darren Lee, because there are so many names in this linebacking corp and in this defensive line as well. A lot of guys on this defense overall. Let's go to the secondary right now, and listen, I think Bashaud Breland is going to be the top cornerback for the Kansas City Chiefs, but number two cornerback, this one's going to be a little interesting. You don't have a lot of powerful depth here. At least for right now, Keith Reeser, he's returning to Kansas City after a nice run in the AAF. And you've got Charvarius Ward, undrafted last year, acquired in a trade from Dallas. And you good?
It froze, so I refreshed it, and then it booted me out. So I lost you at when you started talking about the linebackers.
Okay.
After right. I was done talking.
You're still recording?
Yeah. The recording didn't stop.
All right, okay, here we go. Going to the cornerbacks, I think Bashaud Breland is the top cornerback on the team. Keith Reeser, he's coming back to Kansas City after a nice brief run in that sole season the AAF had. Charvarius Ward, undrafted last year, acquired in a trade from the Dallas Cowboys for offensive lineman Parker Inniger. It's going to be a very interesting defense to see this year, how this cornerback position tries to improve a bit better than last year. I've got Bashaud Breland, and I'll say Charvarius Ward. Maybe a surprising call here. I think those are going to be the two starting quarterbacks going into week one.
I mean, I assume that you're still including just Kendall Fuller in as the slot, correct?
Yes, correct.
Because he's your best cornerback, and it's not close. But I agree. I think he'll be, you know, more of the slot corner, kind of that nickelback that we're seeing, you know, exist more and more in the base defenses. But I think he'll absolutely hold down that role, and I'm with you. I think that Charvarius Ward will be the other outside corner across from Bashaud Breland, but this is another area that I wouldn't be shocked to see the team make a couple of moves as you see cuts come through from other organizations, much like we did with Ward last year. It wouldn't shock me at all.
And sticking with that secondary, Tyrann Mathieu, obviously we know coming in he has that one safety spot locked down, but what about the other spot beside him? Who is going to start in week one between Dan Sorensen and Juan Thornhill? Could Armani Watts raise some eyebrows? I know Twitter is pretty big on Jordan Lucas. I like Dan Sorensen. I think he's better as a role player coming in rotation. I think Juan Thornhill is going to be the rookie who starts in week one for the Chiefs.
Absolutely, because I think he can hold down that sort of center field safety sort of role. Depending on the system, some call that the strong, some call that the free. I tend to think of it as the free, but I digress. I think that he'll be able to, you know, be a really useful piece alongside the Honey Badger, and I wouldn't be shocked to see Spagnuolo use those two as well as Dan Sorensen, you know, just kind of moving them all around the field, because Thornhill's proven he can do pretty much all of it at the collegiate level, so hopefully that translates to the NFL game as well.
This one I'm really excited about. The last one on my list here, Tyreek Hill, kick returner position, I should say first. Look, Tyreek Hill, I know they want him to take a lesser role in these kinds of things, but Tre'Mont Smith, he did pretty good. He was considered the best rookie kick returner last year. Had a couple of big returns, no touchdowns, though. Juan Thornhill and Mecole Hardman, rookies who were some of the fastest players coming into the draft. Darwin Thompson and Rashad Fenton could also be considered for this. You've got lots of candidates for the kick returner spot. Look, I don't think Tre'Mont Smith is going to have a lot of... I don't think he's going to be active as a cornerback, and he's got the least amount of duties as the rest compared to the rest of these guys. I think Tre'Mont Smith will be your kick returner once again for the Chiefs.
See, I agree with you in that he doesn't have as many jobs to do, but I think that for that reason, he's actually probably the least likely to take over in this position, because I don't know that, you know, when it comes down to figuring out the 53-man roster spot, you know, are you going to take, you know, if there's not that big of a gap between Tre'Mont Smith and, say, a Mecole Hardman, you're going to take the guy who can do more stuff for you. And I think that from that perspective, I think it's Mecole Hardman's job to lose for sure.
So there you have it. Our 10 training camp battles going into Chiefs training camp this weekend should be very interesting. This has been a very interesting offseason. I know the Tyreek Hill stuff and the Tyrann Mathieu story, I mean, those dominated headlines the most. But as far as this defense goes, I mean, the Chiefs have made a lot of changes on the defensive side of the football, and that's led to a lot of question marks as to who's going to start in week one. And I think the draft picks that they had with Hardman, with Thornhill, Thompson and Fenton, I mean, those are guys who could be important players to return kicks and punts. I'm mentioning punts because we thought Tyreek Hill was going to be suspended. Look, even Sammy Watkins was doing a radio interview in the offseason saying that, hey, look, we may be playing without him. So I think you looked at these guys and wondered, hey, could these guys fill in for Tyreek Hill when suspended? But not the case, obviously, as we know right now. So you've got a lot of depth on offense, defense, and special teams, something that I don't think this Chiefs team necessarily had last year. I mean, I think you had two good starting receivers on offense and a great tight end, but behind that, other than DeMarcus Robinson, I wasn't too big on the receivers. Whereas this year, I think Byron Pringle, I think he's going to be able to do some things. I'm excited to see him come back. He's got a lot of great speed, former K-Cater, of course. And then some of these draft picks, Thornhill, Hardman, Fenton, and Thompson, I mentioned again. I'm pretty excited for this roster to play out. I'm really looking forward to seeing what the final depth chart is going to be on the 53-man roster.
I agree. It's going to be really interesting, but ultimately, it's a great problem to have, because that means you've got depth and competition across the roster. And I think that, you know, especially as you were just listing off the receivers, I'm sitting there like, dang, we're going to cut some good receivers this year as I'm thinking about it. Hopefully, we'll be able to practice squad them, but there's going to be some talent. There's going to be so much talent in camp that we're not going to be able to keep all of it.
Yeah, it's not just receivers. I mean, linebackers, maybe one of those defensive ends we were talking about. I mean, the Chiefs are going to cut some good players, maybe trade them. Hopefully you can get some draft picks in some of these moves in the next month or so. So it'll be very interesting to see how that all unfolds. All right, next. This was suggested by a listener. Dominic, I believe, was his name. So I said, hey, why not? We've discussed Tyreek Hill way too much this offseason, so let's change things up a bit. I was wanting to do this last week, but the news that came out last week for Tyreek, I thought that was very important to cover. But we're going to go ahead and do it on this podcast. Early game-by-game predictions. Before we do that, did you see USA Today's graphic for predictions for the upcoming season?
Yeah, and I saw that they had the Chargers above us again, and I just don't understand it, but evidently, a lot of other people like Philip Rivers a lot more than I do. Well, I just think he chokes.
It wasn't just the Chargers winning the division. They have the Chargers winning the Super Bowl over the Eagles.
I mean, that's cute. They have a great defense. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to diss on the Chargers as a whole. Like, their organization is stacked. But ultimately, it comes down to, you know, if you look at who's won Super Bowls in the last few years, like, I think the worst quarterback to have done it is Joe Flacco. And I'm not saying that Rivers is worse than Flacco, but I'm saying that it's a quarterback-driven league, and it's a very quarterback-heavy game as a terribly general rule. And I don't think Rivers has what it takes to win the Super Bowl. I might be wrong, but more often than not, like, you know, Phillip Rivers is the guy who you're good for seeing crying on the sidelines in January. That's just how it works.
I disagree. I think he's capable, but I think this team maybe isn't complete overall. I see you're shaking your head no in our video chat here, but look, let me just say this, because I know Chiefs fans are outraged. I disagree, but I don't think it's necessarily crazy to say the Chargers could win. I know Chiefs fans are weighing in on the fact that, you know, this Chiefs team has won the division the last 3 years. Okay, but, yeah, you know, just because someone's winning a division 3, 4, 5 years in a row doesn't mean they're going to win them forever. It'll end at some point, unfortunately, but I just don't think it happens this season necessarily.
I think the issue is really that, you know, again, it comes down to Rivers and can they keep him upright? I mean, their defense is all kinds of salty, and so for all the Chiefs fans who are upset about the fact that a lot of predictions are having the Chargers over the Chiefs, like, you've seen that both the Chargers and the Chiefs have shown an ability to be incredibly prolific on offense, but, I mean, it's, you know, just as an objective observer here, the Chargers' defense certainly looks better on paper than the Chiefs does. That's just a fact. We're not totally sure how this experiment's going to work with Steve Spagnuolo, and until we know a little bit more about it, I mean, I don't blame the national pundits for choosing the Chargers over that, but if you try to tell me that Phillip Rivers is more likely to win a Super Bowl next year than Mahomes, that I'm going to take some issue with, because ultimately it does come down to the quarterback, plain and simple.
Well, let's not forget these two teams, pretty narrow games, and they split the season series last year, and if the Chargers don't get blown out, if they can at least be competitive, maybe we're close to seeing an AFC West clash in the AFC Championship. So we'll see. Maybe it happens this year. Maybe it doesn't. We'll see. But nonetheless, we are going to go ahead and make our game-by-game predictions. Not going to get too in-depth with these. We'll obviously do them as the season goes along. First week at Jacksonville, the last time the Chiefs were in Jacksonville, Zach, it was Andy Reid's very first game as a Chiefs head coach. Week one of 2013, Jacksonville, of course, they now have Nick Foles, former Chiefs QB, as their starting quarterback, also a Super Bowl MVP. I'm going to go with Kansas City in this one, on the road, starting 1-0.
I agree. I think that, you know, they've got a salty defense, but, yeah, the Chiefs are the better team.
And I think that the Chiefs' defense will struggle. I think Nick Foles will have kind of an up-and-down game, but I still think the Chiefs will do enough to prevail in the end. Second game of the season, also on the road, at Oakland. This is going to be a later afternoon game. This might be the final time these two teams meet in Oakland, and I think the Chiefs are going to go into the black hole and pick up a win for the last time, at least for right now, in that black hole.
I think you're absolutely correct. Although, this is their last year in Oakland, is it not?
Yeah, it is. It is. It should be the last time. They're set to move to Vegas, I think.
That's what I thought. And I think that it'll be really fun. You know, the following year, we'll have to make, you know, make a point to go see that game in Vegas, just on general principle.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. I'm definitely excited to see that. But moving on, the home opener, week three. This is going to be a lot of fun. Second year in a row, the Ravens are visiting Kansas City. Mahomes obviously had an epic drive right before the end of regulation. Chiefs really with that big comeback, that big rally late in that game against a very good defense that challenged Kansas City for sure. I've got Kansas City winning this football game. I know this is going to be a tough one for Kansas City. Some people in the national media are marking this as a loss. That Baltimore defense is pretty good. I think it just comes down to whether or not, you know, offensively, Baltimore can provide that balance on this football team. I don't think they can this early with that QB.
I think that you're correct. I think that it's going to be a very, very close game. Like, I don't think the spread will break a touchdown for sure. Especially when you look at how tough they played us last year. I don't think there's any reason to think that this is going to be a gimme by any stretch, but it's the home opener, and we're in a year that, you know, realistically, we're thinking Super Bowl, so I think that we'll be in good shape on this one.
Week four at Detroit, the last time the Chiefs visited Detroit, Jamaal Charles went down with a torn ACL, and Casey got blown out in that football game, and both teams have really changed since then. I've got Kansas City winning this one as well, going to 4-0 on the season.
Yep, that one I don't think there's too much doubt in, unless Matt Stafford comes out with just, you know, having an unbelievable year, which I don't think is going to happen.
Sunday Night Football in Week 5, this is where the schedule gets very interesting and very tough too. The Indianapolis Colts coming back to Arrowhead after being here just recently in January for a divisional round game. Obviously, KC won in a blowout, their first win at home in the playoffs in a very long time. That snapped a big drought. By the way, this is also a stretch where the Chiefs will play four of their next five at home, which is very interesting. This is a tough one, I'll admit. I think it's going to be even closer than that Baltimore game. I think it's going to come down to a field goal or at least a one-possession drive. Maybe in the end, if the Colts have a game, potentially game-winning or game-tying drive, if the Chiefs get a pick six in the end, okay, but that might not resemble how close the game could be. It's going to be that close, but I got the Chiefs pulling away in that one.
Yeah, this is one of the handful of games that I marked with, like, you know, as I was just kind of going through, writing in win-loss, you know, with question marks and whatnot. This is one of the few that I actually put a question mark on because it's going to be a really tough game.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised to see Justin Houston lay a nasty hit on Mahomes. Just, you know, he'll blow by Eric Fisher. It's going to happen. Just plan on it. But I think that ultimately the Chiefs will prevail on that one. But it's going to be really, really close.
I've got to be honest, I was really hoping for this in the playoffs. I knew it was a long shot, but we are going to get it in week six. Knock on wood, no injuries. Deshaun Watson versus Patrick Mahomes for the first time, and this will be at Arrowhead. I've got to say, and again, maybe it's because of that matchup right there between those two QBs. A lot of people thought Deshaun Watson was going to be the one coming to Kansas City when the Chiefs traded up, but they're going to play for the first time, and I'm very excited to see that. Depending on how Kansas City's defense is, I can see this kind of being similar to the Rams and Chiefs game from last year, but if the Chiefs defense improves, I don't think it's going to be that ridiculous, but I've got the Chiefs winning that one as well.
I think the Chiefs will win that one. I think it, you know, well, obviously the overarching narrative will be, yeah, Watson versus Mahomes. It can't be understated the impact that DeAndre Hopkins has on that team. I mean, he's arguably the best receiver in the NFL, and I think that it's, you know, you can make a lot of strong arguments for that. So he's going to be, it'll be interesting to see how he matches up against our corners for sure.
I know the Broncos going to week seven on the road, Thursday Night Football. That is where Patrick Mahomes made his NFL debut. The Broncos haven't been good lately, but for whatever reason, these two teams always have an epic battle for the most part on primetime. In fact, it's the eighth time in 7 years they've played each other on primetime. More primetime games than seasons in that time span. So obviously, the NFL going to continue that, and I think the Chiefs are going to come away with another epic win against the Broncos.
See, I think that's going to be a close one, because if you look at it, it's on Thursday Night Football after a Sunday game against Houston, and it's in Denver. I think that this game is going to be, you know, closer than the two teams, you know, the way that we would normally match up on paper. Like, you know, if it was just, you know, a standard 1 week out, you know, or even just here in Kansas City, I might give the edge to the Chiefs, but I think the Broncos will actually take this one.
All right, so there you have it. The Chiefs starting 6-0 for Zach. I still have him going 7-0. Week 8, Sunday Night Football. First time, maybe the only time, we get Aaron Rodgers versus Patrick Mahomes. Zach, do you remember what happened the last time the Packers came to Arrowhead?
Wasn't that when we had the neckbeard and we were trying to save Romeo Crennel's season?
Well, that was Romeo Crennel, his very first game as the head coach, the interim head coach, I should say. The Chiefs changed quarterbacks and head coaches 6 days before this game. The Packers were unbeaten going into week 15, and the Chiefs came away with that big win. The biggest shocker of the season that year, Kyle Orton was the quarterback, of all people.
Yeah, the neckbeard.
Yes. So the Chiefs came away with a win there. This is going to be another interesting one here. But this time you're going to have two notable quarterbacks. This time Patrick Mahomes leading the way for the Chiefs. Man, like I said, might be the only time we see him, because Rodgers is 35 years old. Packers still a question mark. They have not been themselves the past couple of seasons. Rodgers has been great, but the Packers have not. I've got the Chiefs still coming away in this one. I have them going 8-0 now.
I also have them winning in this one, though. I think that, you know, as Chiefs fans, we should absolutely look to the Packers as a cautionary tale of, you know, what can happen when you have one of the best and rightfully highest paid quarterbacks in the league. And, you know, if it takes that much of a dent on everything else in your organization, you know, a good quarterback will win you a lot of games when it's close, but when it's not close enough, the good quarterback can't do enough. So, you know, just my little 2 cents on that.
Week 9, Minnesota. Last time they came to Arrowhead, Matt Castle and Teddy Bridgewater were the quarterbacks. Times have certainly changed. Look, it's hard to say. I mean, I've got to put a loss at some point. Sometimes you lose games that you're not expected to lose. It happens to every team. Though last year the Chiefs didn't necessarily lose to any bad teams, and they didn't get blown out. But sometimes it happens. I think this is going to be one of those games where you probably should win, yet you don't. So I can see this being an upset. I'll go with Minnesota in this one.
The Vikings have a tough defense, and Kirk Cousins shouldn't be understated as a quarterback. I think he's a lot better than he gets credit for. But is he good enough to beat the Chiefs and Mahomes at home? I don't think so.
On the road at Tennessee, last time these two teams played, the last two times, December of 2016 and January of 2018, Kansas City led both games 14-0 and lost those games. The playoff one, obviously, more heartbreaking. By the way, this is Kansas City's first time facing the Titans with former chief Mike Vrabel, now a head coach of the Titans. Should be very interesting. I think Mike Vrabel did some good things with that Titans team, but I think the Chiefs can go on the road and pick up a win in Tennessee.
I say the roster is just better. As long as Mariota is not going to get away with throwing touchdowns to himself, yeah. I think we're okay here.
And then in Mexico, this is actually a Chargers home game, but going to be on neutral site, Monday Night Football. Second year in a row, the NFL is trying to get the Chiefs in Mexico. Hopefully it happens this time with the field conditions, but I'll do it, man. I know I'm going to get a bird for this on Twitter. I've got the Chargers winning this one.
Yeah, this was another one that I had marked with questions, just because, you know, it's not one that I think is a, you know, stone-cold lead pipe lock for a victory. I mean, the Chargers are a damn good team, and I have a split in the season series as well. And I have them losing this one.
Now, I will say this. Bye week, again, 2 years in a row because of the whole Mexico deal. The Chiefs are going to have their bye week in week 12 again. And you know what? Hey, this is a great time to have a bye week. You're getting ready to kind of recharge your batteries before December. And when you look at December, you've got three home games, all of them against divisional opponents. And I think that is a very key point to note here for the bye week for the Chiefs.
I think that we're going to come out strong from the bye week like Andy Reid always does, and we're going to, you know, knock the Raiders there in week 13.
All right, and that is going to be the first game, as you just mentioned, week 13, divisional opponent, and this is going to be the first time the Chiefs will, as we just mentioned, basically, first time all year the Chiefs will have a divisional home game. But you know what? I'd rather have them in December. I know Chiefs fans maybe not, it's not as appealing to go to a divisional home game when the weather is cold, but hey, Chiefs fans are going to show up. We just know that's going to be the case. Andy Reid obviously has that historical record after the bye, although in Kansas City hasn't been as strong, but I think he'll let history repeat itself here, and the Chiefs will come out with a win here. Let's move on to Week 14. This is the big one right here. CBS tried very hard to protect this game. It is at New England. These two always have an epic showdown. Even when the Chiefs are blowing out the Patriots, it's always talked about and it's always highlighted. So you know everyone's going to be tuning into this game. It's a 3:25 kickoff game and it's not going to change. AFC Championship rematch. New England won both games last year by one possession, coming down to final plays, a game-winning field goal and a touchdown in overtime. Look, I know after the draft or when the schedule came out, I said it's a loss and I've got to be fair, but I just know I'm going to change my prediction and say win against the Patriots, so I'm just going to say we win.
Ah, see, I can't. I mean, look, you're still going up to play Brady and Belichick in Foxborough in December. Yeah, I don't like our odds on that one, man.
And just a reminder, the Patriots are coming to Kansas City next year regardless. So for those frustrated about why the regular season we're always going there, well, it's going to change next year, so the Patriots will come. The NFL cycle schedule, kind of funky, but once you understand it, we've talked about this in the offseason, you'll pick it up. But Week 15 versus Denver, I don't know what kind of a football team Denver's going to be by this point. I don't even know who their quarterback is going to be. It's going to be Joe Flacco. Is it going to be Drew Locke, former Mizzou QB? Regardless, I think Kansas City will still come away with a win in this one and get another season sweep against the Broncos. I know you're not picking a season sweep, but how do you see the Week 15 matchup going?
I mean, you can mark it down now. We'll revisit this here in Week 15, but you can put it down that we'll beat the Broncos for sure, but I also think that one of the storylines is going to be Drew Locke, the Lee Summit, or, you know, Kansas City kid, coming home to play an Arrowhead.
Second season in a row, the Chiefs get a Week 16 Sunday night game. This time it's going to be at Chicago. First ever Mahomes versus Trubisky matchup. So Mahomes is going to be facing some of his fellow draft class QBs.
That's also Reed versus Nagy for the first time too, isn't it?
Yeah, that is. I'm glad you mentioned that. They did play in the preseason, but that's preseason. Nonetheless, it's going to be interesting. This is pretty close. I'll go with a loss here. This will be the third loss I've got for the Chiefs this year.
I mean, I don't like the idea of going to Soldier Field in December either, but I think the Chiefs have enough to pull it out on this one.
Chargers, final game of the regular season for the Chiefs. This could be flexed to a Sunday night game because, let's not forget, they both finished 12-4 last year. Maybe they both could be fighting for not just the division, but also the entire AFC. So this, I'll say this, one prediction I will guarantee that will come true, this is going to be a Sunday night game. It'll flex because these are the top two teams in the AFC along with the Patriots. So nonetheless, I'm going to say the Chiefs can come out on top in this one.
Yeah, I think we'll finish strong. You know, I had us taking the L in Mexico, but I think that we'll absolutely get them back here.
So I've got them going 13-3. What do you have, 12-4?
I also had 13-3. Right?
Okay.
Did I call Indy as a win or not? I thought
you said that was a loss.
I don't think I had them losing to Indy. I know I had us losing to Denver, okay, and then the Chargers in Mexico, and then New England. So those are my three losses.
Okay. All right. So there you have it. 13-3, both of us. I assume you have number one seed for KC. Maybe a little early to discuss that, but that's what I have.
Without looking at everybody else's schedule, I think so. I mean, 13-3, you should be the number one seed, but I don't know. I guess squirrelier things have happened.
Chiefs were 12-4 last year, and they got the number one seed, so I think that could be a realistic possibility for 2019. All right, we got a lot of text messages. 913-808-2119. Shoot us a text. Leave us a voicemail. That is a number. By the way, second week in a row, I forgot this. Facebook.com/FarzineVesugian. That is my Facebook page. Like it. Follow me on Facebook. I'm on Twitter at Farzine21, and Zach is at ZStegengun. I'll put that in our podcast description as well. Let's get right into it. We have six text messages and then two more for our hot take segment. First text message from the 620, Matt from Southeast Kansas. The league did the right thing not suspending Hill. Tyreek is going to light it up this year and hopefully get a new contract. This is a perfect example of why people should stop jumping to conclusions.
I mean, he has a point. I think that realistically, the man's not going to get the contract that he, based on strictly his play alone, would deserve. But I mean, I think that, yeah, I hope he tears it up this year as well.
From the 979, I don't know where that is, and this person didn't leave a name, but that's okay. With Tyreek Hill cleared and what I assume will be the start of or continuing of contract negotiations with him, where do you think that puts us with Chris Jones? Okay, that's a good question. The reports have come out that there's no progression whatsoever, and I've got to say, Zach, I'm kind of concerned because Harrison Butker, he was there for mandatory OTAs. He got his deal. So did Mitchell Schwartz. But yet your best player on defense did not. I don't know. I don't know how to answer that other than the fact that I've got to admit I'm kind of concerned. Look, I know Le'Veon Bell was a running back, but I'm starting to wonder if players are going to look at Le'Veon Bell and maybe just use that as leverage as to what they're going to do and hold out for the entire year. I don't think Chris Jones does that, but kind of makes you wonder if that's a trend that's now going to start in the NFL.
I don't think he's going to hold out for the entire year, but it can't be understated the fact that who has he been training with in the offseason? None other than Le'Veon Bell. And so I think that once we get him to training camp, ultimately both sides will come together and work this out, especially if he, you know, continues to crush it the way that I believe he will. But I'm with you, man. I think I'm more nervous about this than I ever thought I would be.
Yeah, and look, I get him not showing up. He had a huge season. Obviously got the record for most most consecutive games with a sack. So he's really wanted to cash in as much as possible and avoid injury because freak accidents happen, man, even in practice. That's one that for sure we're going to keep an eye on, and I'm sure we will discuss next week on the podcast. From the 816, Enrique from Gladstone wrote a bit of a long text here. My thoughts on Tyreek Hill. If detectives, NFL, other agencies did all their investigations and found nothing incriminating to charge him with or suspend him with, I take their word for it. They obviously know way more than the rest of us know, so I will take their final decision on that matter. I do not believe it's just because I'm a Chiefs fan, but I would accept it if they found him guilty too. I did not jump to conclusions like a lot of people I think mostly would, because the Kareem Hunt case, it made me step back and wait till all the details come out, or wait until TMZ reports it. Yeah, that's certainly a valid point. Look, I will disagree. Does the NFL know more than we do? The Kareem Hunt story begs to differ, but again, here's what the thing I will say. I know a lot of NFL fans don't see it this way, but I think the NFL maybe learned its lesson with the Tom Brady case. And I know he destroyed the evidence, but the Ezekiel Elliott case, and now maybe they took their time on this one, and I think they got it right. Again, a lot of people disagree, but maybe the NFL is kind of learning its lesson from before. I hope.
Yeah, and I'm with you, Enrique, on the fact that, you know, the detectives and Child Protective Services, you know, all those agencies did their investigations and didn't find something. I think that, you know, they certainly know way more than we do. And I think that ultimately, yeah, it is certainly a lesson not to jump to conclusions the way that, you know, Fars and I have both admitted to.
From the 270, most fans of other teams didn't listen to the full recording after it came out. Let me just say this. I don't even think the full... It's important because of the 2014 discussion, but I don't even think that's relevant for this whole, you know, child abuse allegation. I think the text messages in the... and the not cooperating, Crystal not cooperating, is more important. But nonetheless, he or she, I don't want to assume genders, says people didn't listen to the full recording and refuse to believe he is innocent and Crystal is crazy. I'm so glad Hill will be able to play. I can't wait to see him live in November. I mean, we've kind of covered this. You know, the full recording, look, I get it. You know, is a Bengals fan in Ohio really going to listen to all 11 minutes? No, of course not. Let me say this. I promise you, there is one small yet maybe a key detail of the Tom Brady situation that maybe we don't know of, that maybe people in New England know very well about. I can understand that as well. Because, you know, does a Dolphins fan care about this whole Tyreek Hill story? Probably not.
Do the Dolphins have fans?
They do have fans. There are some fans in Miami. Some years they have fans. Let's keep going here. From the 401, Steve in Massachusetts, this should be a lesson. We've got a lot of texts here. This should be a lesson for all of us, as I said earlier, jumping to conclusions. Let's hear the facts before we condemn them. Sometimes things are not as they seem. Glad Tyreek is back, and hopefully he can move on from this. And also, from the 602, the ultimate feeling I have on the Tyreek situation is letting the due process play out, and it was honored for once. Too often in this immediate satisfaction era, we live in an era where people are needing to prove their innocence rather than guilt beyond a reasonable doubt. This is the core belief of the American justice system. Should he have been found guilty, of course, he should have been banned from the NFL. This is not the case in this matter, and I'm satisfied the Chiefs organization suspended and banned him from team activities while letting the investigation carry on. I truly feel they did the right thing, and hopefully we can all learn patience from all of this, and I'm guilty of that as well. Those two texts kind of go side by side there. Yeah, look, I think we all have kind of learned a lesson in all of this. Patience, for sure. I think, you know, looking back, I wish I would have said, hey, look, those 2 minutes are really, really ugly, but there are also another 9 minutes there. Why didn't we hear all of that? That's all.
Yeah, I think that while we certainly jump to conclusions, I mean, I'll admit, you know, once again, I'm absolutely guilty of that.
A lot of us are.
Yeah. Yeah, but the, you know, once there was additional context, you didn't see me continue to double down on the take that, you know, I had dove in on before. And, yeah, I'm happy to say you'll never see me do something like that just because, yeah, you always adapt to new information. That's just how life works. So now it's just a lesson to be patient about it.
We all, whether you're a fan or you don't have any care whatsoever in the Chiefs or the NFL or sports, or if you're a journalist, I think everybody learned something in all of this. Hopefully the people involved in the misleading of the story, hopefully they learned the most in all of this. If you guys want to text us or leave a voicemail, 913-808-2119. Let's wrap up the show. Let's go to our closing segment, starting with the Around the NFL. The NFL, here we go. They have suspended Seahawks defensive tackle Jaron Reed for 6 games for violating the NFL personal conduct policy stemming from a 2017 domestic violence case in which Reed was accused of assault but was never charged nor arrested. However, the NFL's conduct policy allowed it to punish players regardless of legal outcomes. Now, I'll admit, I know it's getting compared to the Tyreek Hill thing. I'll admit, I don't know all the details of this, but I did see him release something on social media where he apologized and he was very regretful of what he did. So it sounds like he was in a position where he maybe deserved this 6-game suspension. I know maybe there are other details we don't know about, but it seems like he knows that he deserves this.
I mean, candidly, I have not been able to follow that story super closely. The whole move to New York thing has put a little bit of a damper on the consumption of general sports media. So I'm going to have to read in on that before I can provide much of an opinion. But I can certainly understand, like it or not, the fact that there's another domestic violence, suspension rendered in the face of this whole thing with Tyreek Hill. I understand. Don't get me wrong. I don't condone. I understand where a bunch of other fans are going to come from by saying, like, yep, NFL has a double standard. Clearly, something with Clark Hunt and Goodell and, favoring the Chiefs because of Mahomes or something. I don't know. There's going to be plenty of conspiracy theories out there. I get where you're coming from, but I don't condone it by any stretch of the imagination.
Mark Sanchez, a legend in some capacity, has retired from the NFL, was briefly nicknamed the Sanchez in New York, where you are right now. After a up and down 10-year career for him, maybe not up and down, maybe started up and then went way down. First two NFL seasons helped the Jets reach the AFC Championship game, fell short both times, unfortunately, under Rex Ryan, and then the Jets heavily declined. Sanchez definitely declined. He had the butt fumble, and he just never rebounded from that. Look, he seems like a nice guy, but he became a journeyman, and let's be honest, man, he is going to be remembered for the butt fumble. That is the marquee moment in Mark Sanchez's career.
I mean, since he never won a Super Bowl, absolutely that's the case. Though, I just laugh because I remember I was watching that draft with my dad. And when we were watching it, you can go back and look at the footage for this. You'll see that when Sanchez gets drafted, the first thing he does, he puts on his Jets hat and he fixes his hair. Dad and I knew at that point that he probably wasn't going to be much of a football player.
Just because he fixed his hair?
Yeah, no, he's like just sitting there. I mean, like, if you watch the... tape, you'll see, like, he's just making sure that, not one hair out of place. It's gotta be just kind of pretty boy type stuff, which, I mean, happens more commonly in quarterbacks than any other position, but certainly doesn't necessarily bode well for, one's long-term prospect. I just remember that was just something that hit Dad and I funny when we were watching that draft.
Fun fact, the Chiefs passed on Mark Sanchez for defensive end Tyson Jackson. Speaking of defensive ends, formerly of Kansas City, Alan Bailey reuniting with Bob Sutton in Atlanta. He's, funny enough, going to a 4-3 scheme. The Chiefs, maybe they were not interested in retaining him. They let go of a lot of guys in this defensive change. By the way, Dan Quinn, not only the head coach, but also the defensive coordinator for Atlanta, they're not giving that role to Bob Sutton. Maybe he doesn't want it. I don't know. But yeah, Alan Bailey reuniting with Bob Sutton in Atlanta.
Let's be honest. Do you think they want the headline of, oh yeah, we're going to help fix our defense, we're bringing in the guy who had the second to worst defense in the NFL last year? Like, no, I don't want that headline if I'm the Falcons.
Yeah, but a head coach and a coordinator, that's such a hard duty to carry, Zach. Or duties, I should say.
I agree with you 100% on that, but I think that ultimately it's, will Sutton have more influence? Of course, but they'll still show Quinn as the defensive coordinator, because you don't want to show Bob Sutton, who had, again, the second to worst defense in the NFL last year.
Let's keep going. Let's go out of bounds. The Kansas City Royals had kind of a scary moment last week where a little girl was hit by a line drive foul ball. The Royals are going to extend the netting to the foul poles. I don't know exactly when that's going to be, but this something very similar happened in Chicago. A lot of people are complaining, saying that the netting is going to obstruct the views. Look, the most expensive seats are right behind where the nets are, where the netting is. I think people don't realize this. And by the way, having worked for the Royals in their media production and being in this press box in the control room, my view of the of basically the batter's box, the netting's in the way, but you just don't even notice it after a while. Maybe in the first couple of pitches, you talk about it with your friend or whoever you're with, but honestly, you hardly even notice the nets as the game goes on. You really don't. And I think this is a good move, and I hope other teams follow suit.
Yeah, from a safety perspective, it's the right call. I think that, it'll miss a handful of foul balls being caught, which is certainly part of the fun of going to baseball games, but I don't think that, yeah, my ability to catch a foul ball isn't worth some kid getting hit in the face.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. By the way, speaking of Kansas City and events coming here, the FIFA World Cup, we didn't talk about this. Obviously, they won the FIFA World, the women's national team. And I know they caught a lot of attention with the negativity, but we didn't talk about them winning the World Cup. And Kansas City had a huge turnout every game at Power and Light. And this is not a new thing. This has been going on for a long time for both men's and women's soccer games. They always show some of the big watch parties, and Kansas City has always shown either at halftime or before or after games. Yeah, you got to start considering Kansas City very heavily for one of those World Cup games that they're going to be bringing here in a few years in the United States, or in North America, I should say. Kansas City has to be one of your top spots.
I mean, the fact that we're still in the discussion is huge when you look at some of the cities that we're going up against, and, you know, historically the size of those cities versus Kansas City. So I wouldn't be shocked to see Kansas City actually get the nod there, but we'll have to see. It'll come down to, do we have the airport and the public transportation, realistically? I mean, FIFA's come out and said as much.
I know you're a big Marvel fan, as am I. Marvel announced its next set of films for Phase 4. Obviously, Endgame was the massive one, and then Spider-Man Far From Home, which is out in theaters now. That concluded Phase 3 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe films. They announced a lot of films for the upcoming phase. Black Widow, The Eternals, Shang-Chi, Legend of the Ten Rings, Doctor Strange 2 in 2021, and then the big one, Thor Love and Thunder, coming out in 2021. That's a huge one. They're also bringing Blade to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's just hard for me to even think anyone other than Wesley Snipes could take that role, but I suppose he's not as young as he once was in the late 90s when the first Blade came out.
Nah, but straight up, Mahershala Ali,
oh,
he's going to come in and be Blade. Like, he's, don't get me wrong, I'm with you on, it'll be weird seeing someone other than Wesley Snipes, but if anybody other than Wesley Snipes can do it, Mahershala Ali absolutely will crush that role. That's going to be awesome to see.
Fantastic Four is now joining the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is going to be very interesting. Now, these are rumors, but they are a rumor. These rumors are, they generally come true. Black Panther, Captain Marvel, Ant-Man, and Guardians of the Galaxy will continue sometime in 2022, 2023, and 2024. Okay, look, those are great movies, and I'm looking forward to them. They're sequels and all, and I love the hype and anticipation, but is the world even going to exist in 2024? I mean, we're planning for the third Ant-Man or the third Guardians of the Galaxy in 2024. I mean, let's let a few years go by and then make those announcements. I don't even know if the world's going to exist then.
I mean, I think it's safe to say the world's going to exist still. Might be a little toasty, but it's still going to exist. But, I mean, I think it's certainly, it's more of the hype train, I think, than anything else. Because if you look at the way that they've announced things in the past, it's always flexible. I mean, Pixar announced a couple of movies long before they actually came out. Like, Frozen was actually supposed to, yeah, it was a concept, I think it was going to drop in like 08, 09 or something like that. You'll have to Google that, because I know it's, my years might be off, but yeah, point being, those projects come and go, and there's plenty of time to flex between now and then.
So, okay, while we're on the topic, real quickly, I know we got to move on, but the Disney put out a list, or somebody leaked out a list of a Microsoft Word doc, and it had all the movies, and it had Avatars 2, 3, and 4 coming out in the late 2020 decade. And I'm like, wait a minute, they had Avatar 1 for the longest time, and there was not an Avatar 2. Now they have three Avatar films.
Disney bought it.
What's that?
That's because Disney bought it.
Well, I get that, but three Avatar films all of a sudden in a five-year span? I mean, that to me seems rushed.
It'll be interesting to see how that works. I mean, if the first one goes well, then obviously the next two. But if you look at it from, you know, in part from a financial perspective, which, let's be honest, that is part of this game. You know, Avatar was the highest grossing film of all time, and they had to re-release Endgame to beat it.
That so, is true.
I think that they're banking on the fact that, you know, that was a huge draw. I think they're also missing the fact that part of the draw of that was because, you know, in 3D at that time, it was truly an experience you couldn't get any place else any other way. So they're going to have to come up with something similarly awesome to, you know, continue to hold audiences' attention. But yeah, I think it's a little overkill to say that they're going to do four of those, I'd try the first sequel out before I announce the next two. Yeah. Just my humble opinion here.
A lot can happen. We'll see how that all pans out. Let's keep this train going on to our penalty flag segment. Zach, did you hear about DJ Durkin and what he did at Maryland last year?
Yeah.
Okay, so...
Not a good look by any stretch of the imagination.
So he was the Maryland head coach. We discussed this on the podcast. He put his players through some really barbaric practices, some barbaric drills, making offensive linemen hundreds of yards. Like, why are you doing that to your offensive linemen of all people? In fact, that led to a player's death who had to be rushed to the hospital. Other players suffered serious injuries. He is now a training camp assistant for the Falcons under Dan Quinn, who I saw a headline, I never saw the article, but Dan Quinn was defending him on this one. Look, there was a death of a college student here. I don't know what defending I would do. I don't even know why this guy is still even part of football. Nonetheless, he went from college to the NFL now.
To be fair, I think that, you know, if he's going to stay involved in football, it's probably best for him to be on an NFL staff where he's not, you know, the head guy in charge. Because can you imagine, like, you know, if he were to take the proverbial step back and go coach a high school team?
No, that's a valid point.
So I'm not saying that it's, you know, I'm not saying it's necessarily a good look, but I think that it fits better in the professional game than any place else. Because like it or not, these are grown men. You know, they're not college students. And there's going to be enough others on the staff to check him whenever he gets nuts. So,
okay, a lot of outrage for Tom Brady. He and his daughter, he released a video on social media. He and his daughter jumping off a cliff in a waterfall. People are calling for a suspension. People are calling for Tom Brady to be a better parent. There's a lot of outrage for this. Look, I didn't see anything wrong. The girl was wanting to jump down. She seemed a little scared, so her dad, Tom Brady, you know, superhero father with six Super Bowl rings, is going to hold his daughter's hand, and they're going to jump together. Let it go. Nothing happened.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Like, look, I'm not a parent, and, you know, I'm pretty far away from becoming one, I'm willing to bet. But by the same token, I think it's ridiculous the way that, you know, everybody just kind of jumps in and says, you know, like, is willing to be the parenting police, so to speak. It's like, man, as long as you're not, you know, beating your kid, like, I don't, like, something like this, like, you know what? You shouldn't have that level of insight into his life anyway. Like, just let it go, people. Like, I don't defend Tom Brady often, but in this case, yeah, I'd go to bat for this one.
Yeah.
He's just ridiculous.
I don't even know what to say for that one. This one, I've got a couple of things to say. So, UFC light heavyweight champion John Bones Jones, who, by the way, he has had his title stripped three times already in his career due to a hit-and-run incident with a pregnant woman, testing positive for a banned substance, and again testing positive for an anabolic steroid. He was recently charged with battery for an alleged incident involving a cocktail waitress in Albuquerque back in April, where the waitress claims Jones slapped her, put her in a chokehold, kissed her on the neck. She asked him to stop, and he wouldn't. Look, I know, again, one big reason many jumped to conclusions with the Tyreek Hill situation was because of his history, and it's very easy to do the same with John Jones and say he's guilty, but we do need to let the facts come out. And with that said, John Jones doesn't keep getting into trouble for no reason on accident. Trouble follows some people like a magnet because they let it happen. John Jones continues to find himself in this situation. He has denied these allegations on social media. That's what you would expect most of the time. He did deny the anabolic steroid thing, which ended up being true. By the way, fun fact, he's the first UFC champion to be stripped twice, and he's already been stripped a third time. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with a fourth time, and I get he's a UFC superstar, and in the business of combat sports, you need your superstar so you can make dough on your pay-per-view buys, but how many strikes does one person really get? How many strikes do you get, Zach?
I mean, maybe they're just trying to help him pad his stats so he can set the record for most titles stripped.
I mean, like, that is the most... Like, at some point, I am just impressed if you get your title stripped that many times. Like, isn't that, like, it's one of those things where it's, like, hard to get in trouble that many times. and you just find a way to get in trouble that many times.
Well, I think it's also just, yeah, from a strictly fighting perspective, the fact that he's able to maintain his title, to have it stripped that many times, like, I mean, that's kind of impressive in and of itself. Like, to be that good and just be that much of an idiot, you know, it's like, you know, there's no reason Josh Gordon shouldn't be leading the NFL in receiving most years. Like, dude's a stud, but, you know, he just can't lay off the weed, which, don't get me wrong, that's a separate debate entirely, yeah. And I think that with the legalization of it, the NFL's going to have to figure its stuff out, certainly for the next CBA, but it's just amazing. I mean, you know, can't think of a time when we've had someone perform at such a consistently high level in whatever field they're in, but just, you know, continue shooting themselves in the foot off the field, or in this case, out of the octagon.
All right, we are going to move on to our hot takes segment. What is a hot take? It is where you have an opinion that goes against conventional wisdom. You're going against the grain. A lot of people have one opinion. You have something completely different. It doesn't have to be controversial. You don't have to necessarily be angry about it. But for the most part, you just have an opinion that that heavily differs from a lot of people. We got a couple of texts for our hot takes. Let me read those first. Michael from North Carolina said, for hot take, mine is we will lead the NFL in interceptions and a surprise cut, Carlos Hyde.
Hot take.
Interesting. I mean, I don't think it's... I mean, it certainly fits the definition of a hot take, because I don't see that happening, but, I mean, shoot. I've seen crazier things happen.
Yeah, I will take the interception hot take for sure. This one's from Enrique. He sent two texts this week. That's how dedicated of a listener he is. My hot take is that next year Farzin will go to Vegas and hit $10,000 and will finally buy that Patrick Mahomes jersey he's been wanting. That's $5,000. LMAO.
So hot.
Just say LMAO. And then he has a bunch of emojis in this one, laughing and the thumbs up. I don't think I shared the story on the podcast. I maybe talked about this last year. I definitely talked about it on social media. So in Vegas, there are a couple of sports memorabilia stores and some like non-sports memorabilia stores where they have like, you know, posters, movie posters all signed and they're on sale for thousands of dollars. So there's this one store that has a Patrick Mahomes jersey sitting in front of the store, signed, and a couple of pictures of him, 8x10 pictures, $5,000. And to me, it's like, first of all, I just went on Google and I typed signed Mahomes jersey. I found one for a couple of $100. So there are, you know, you can find a signed Mahomes jersey
legit
for, you know, a fifth of the price. And I'm sure they come with COAs. That's important. Most of the time, these things do.
What's a COA?
A certificate of authenticity.
I didn't know that. I just wanted to make sure our listeners
know. Okay, well, there you go. Fair enough. You know, by the way, there was another store. And again, this one was, they had some sports stuff, but it was mostly movie posters. Their Avengers Endgame movie poster was sold out. The one that had, like, you know, the picture, the faces of all the actors.
Right.
And I asked him, I go, how much was that? How much was that? Because there was no price next to it. And he goes, oh, it was $1,500. And then he says, you know what? I've got another one for you. It just says Avengers Endgame. And he's reading me like the list of all the actors. Because I asked him, I go, who signed it? And he reads me all 26 actors. I'm like, in my head, I'm like, I've seen the movie. But he goes, you know what? I'll give you a discounted price. I'll sell it to you for $1,350. And in my head, I'm like, that's not a discount. I mean, that's still a lot of money. And then I just looked at him. I go, nah, I'm good. That's too much. He's like, come on, man. It's $50 a signature. I'm like, yeah, but you can find it online for cheaper. And he was pissed because I basically, you know, these guys don't want to hear that you can find it way cheaper online. They hate that stuff. That's how they don't make business. And I said it loud enough so that the other customers in the store, these are nice stores to like walk into and browse, but people, I don't know if people are buying stuff. I'm not sure, but
I mean, they're paying the rent, so clearly someone's buying stuff.
Yeah, that is very true. I mean, these places are very, especially in Vegas, they're expensive. But that is what Enrique is alluding to in this hot take. He always has like the best hot takes. I like Enrique. But yeah, man, I mean, these stores in Vegas, it's like they have these nice clothing stores that are like, you know, $10,000 a jacket. As you said, I guess someone's buying them because I've seen these stores over the years in Vegas and they're still standing, I guess. I just want to know, like, Metallica's guitar is on sale for $15,000. Like, who the hell is buying that?
I mean, I don't know. I just, you know, thinking if I had that kind of money just laying around, I really can't imagine just throwing it on something that I would want to hang on my wall. But by the same token, if it's, you know, there's collectors out there who, you know, if that's going to be the crown jewel of their collection, well, I guess then more power to you.
Dana White, the president of the UFC, he recently gave like an exclusive tour of his office, and he has a saber-toothed tiger, that like the teeth of a saber-toothed tiger. And the story is, in 2008, 2009, when the economy was crashing, museums were kind of freaking out because people weren't coming into to their museums. And so he decided to buy a saber-toothed tiger from that museum, and he spent $22,000 on that. I'm like, why? Like, do you know how many hungry people you can feed with that money?
That's a really fair point.
And even then,
if it was a live tiger, maybe that's one thing. Ask Mike Tyson a thing or two about that. But, an extinct tiger? I mean, I don't know. It seems a little steep.
My thing is like, look, even if you want to buy collectibles, first of all, like, let's say that Patrick Mahomes $5,000 jersey, you can buy a jersey online for a couple hundred bucks, and then if you really have $5,000 to spend, you can buy more memorabilia items online for much cheaper. I mean, it's just, these things are online. People don't realize the power of online shopping and just how cheap it can be sometimes.
Well, the other part on that, you know, if you've got $5,000 to spend and you want to ensure that you have an authentic Patrick Mahomes signed jersey, why wouldn't you buy a jersey, use the rest of it to pay for a ticket to go see the Chiefs at training camp in St. Joe, and get Mahomes to sign it? Then you have both the jersey that is the now authentic signed Mahomes jersey. You can authenticate it yourself by being like, yep, was definitely there, watched him sign it, could still smell the Sharpie. Yeah, it's just amazing to me that, you know, you'd be willing to pay up for that in a store, even if it isn't, you know, even if it is framed and that's all nice.
Well,
it seems kind of silly to me.
That is a great transition to my hot take, which is NFL related. I'm just going to say it right now. NFL training camp is completely overrated.
This is
one of those things where, look, a lot of times when, like, the team president or the general manager or the CEO or the owner, that's when they do interviews the most, because they're over there with the rest of the front office and the media wants to talk to them, so they'll make themselves available. And they say things like, you know, training camp is the best time to come out and see the players, because this is when they are going full speed 100% because they're fighting for a roster spot. And to me, it's like, look, you know, the scrimmages are fun and all, and seeing players like Tyreek Hill could be fun, but, you know, they go through some boring-ass drills that you have to sit and endure for a very long time. And mind you, in Kansas City or St. Joe nearby, you're going to be sitting 2 to 3 hours in the humidity, in like hell, basically, and you're going to watch all these things. I get it. People want to go up and get the autographs afterwards, but I don't even know if it's worth going through all that heat to watch practice for a couple of hours just to get an autograph. I really don't know if it's worth it that much. Training camp is boring as hell. If you go, sure, enjoy it, I guess, but I have way better things to do. I've been to training camp as a member of the media, man. It is boring as hell. You're watching these guys practice. I mean, at some point, the media even doesn't care anymore what they're doing in practice drills. I know the Chiefs are going to blow it up and say, oh, here's, you know, fifth string running back Joe Schmo. He had a nice run up the middle for 40 yards. Yeah, let's see him do that in a regular season game if he makes the roster cut. Training camp is boring.
I mean, I think that it's certainly a hot take from, you know, the fan perspective. Like, look, I'm going to be intrigued by paying attention to training camp, but that doesn't mean you're going to find me out there. So I think that that's, you know, an interesting distinction to draw. Like, you know, going out and seeing it, yeah, I'm totally with you. That sounds wicked boring. But I think training camp is also one of the most exciting times of the year, just because of the sheer level of exposure that we as fans really can get to the team.
Zach, do you have a hot take for this week?
You know, I don't. I was struggling to come up with one. I was going to say the Chiefs are going to lead the league in sacks, but realistically, we did that last year. It can't be that hot of a take. So,
well, I mean,
I'll do better next week.
That's somewhat of a hot take. Maybe not. Maybe a lukewarm take, because the Chiefs did let go of Justin Houston, D. Ford. Maybe a lukewarm take. I would accept that.
I mean, yeah, it's, you know, it's as warm as, like, you know, the slice of pizza that you've left sitting out for a couple hours. Like, it's not quite cold yet, but it's, you know, not nearly as warm as it started. I'd say that, you know, that's probably where that take fits in.
So what's your plan with New York in the next? You're still apartment hunting, correct?
Yeah, which is great fun. And by that I mean it is not great fun.
No.
But I'm adjusting to it.
Well, you know what? If anyone knows of any good spots to go to a sports bar, catch Chiefs games, whatever, I don't know. Are you going to get, like, Sunday ticket
I've
or anything?
I've already looked. There's a spot. I believe it's called... It's John Brown's... I think it might be John Brown's Saloon, maybe? Or no, John Brown's Smokehouse. That's what it is. It's out on Long Island. It's a Kansas City guy. Opened up a barbecue spot. And that's, you know, where a lot of people get together to watch Chiefs games. So props to Arrowhead Pride for having a list of Chiefs bars all around the country, because that is how I found that. And then I did a little bit of research, and it's like, man, they've got a relationship with Tony Richardson and a bunch of other people. Like, pretty cool.
Okay.
So definitely plan to make a stop in there here
in the next
couple of days just to try out the barbecue. But then certainly if it's good, I'll be a fixture there on Sundays.
Well, I know you're having a lot of fun in New York. I'm sure you'll get a chance to explore the city once you get settled in. So very cool. We'll have to talk about that later on as well. I'm very excited to hear all of that as you continue your adventure there. And you're still staying with us.
Oh, absolutely.
That's the best part.
Yeah, I mean, I could still cover the Chiefs from here. Yeah, I could still pay attention and be able to do everything I need to do here, and might even be able to bring a slightly more out-of-town perspective. We'll see.
All right, you are a true soldier. I appreciate you doing that, so we'll definitely keep in touch. And I know you may be busy throughout the preseason, so I know you may have to dip out a couple of podcasts. I know you'll try your best, but we'll see how that all goes out. So if Zach's not available for a podcast in the near future, might be why he's trying to settle in and get a lot of things taken care of. So best of luck to you on that. And
hopefully it won't have much of an impact on the podcast.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Hopefully. We'll see. We'll be patient. We got some time. But I'm sure you'll be very busy in the near future. Nonetheless, appreciate you guys downloading and listening to the podcast. Facebook.com/FarzineVesugian. My Facebook page. Like it. Follow me. Follow me on Twitter @Farzine21. Follow Zach @ZStegenga. And call in, leave a voicemail, or text the podcast. 913-808-2119. 913-808-2119. I've got to admit, I don't know exactly when the next podcast is going to be. I'm going to be out of town this weekend on a business trip. And Zach is obviously trying to figure out his living situation in New York City. So next week is a little, it's going to be a little spontaneous. Not exactly sure when we're going to have another episode. So please be patient on that. I'll let you guys know on social media.
After the first preseason game, yeah.
Well, say that again.
A couple weeks from now. Isn't our first preseason game in a couple of weeks?
It is on the Saturday the 10th, and I believe it's the Bengals on that one. I'll be honest, I don't know the preseason schedule outside of the Bengals. I don't have that down, but I know it's the Bengals' first game.
Yeah, we can hit either before or after that. That ought to work.
Yeah, we'll figure it all out. We'll definitely have some content. We'll have an episode before that as well too. So. We'll let you guys know on social media. That is the best place to, if you guys are trying to figure out when we're going to do an episode next, that is the best place to go. Nonetheless, for Zach Seginga, I am Farzine Vesugian. Thank you guys once again for downloading and listening. We will talk to you guys sometime in early August. Enjoy training camp. We'll have a lot to talk about next episode. Chris Jones, what's his situation? How's Tyreek Hill doing? Is he going to answer for the past few months, and what's going on with some of the training camp battles. All of that and much more next time on the podcast.